AI PCs built for business with Intel Core Ultra processors and Intel vPro are optimized for hundreds of AI apps and tools to boost user productivity, collaboration, and creativity. No product can be absolutely secure. Learn more at intel.com/itheroes.
The Biden administration and tech companies agree to voluntary AI guardrails. Plus, why the Dow and tech-heavy NASDAQ are heading in opposite directions, and our look at China's place in the global order as its economic engine falters.
China may end up getting stuck in what economists call this middle income trap here, where they're never quite able to break through to that next level of per capita GDP growth.
It's Friday, July 21st. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The White House says it has reached a deal with tech companies on artificial intelligence safeguards. Seven major AI companies, Amazon, Anthropic, Google, Inflection, Meta, Microsoft, and OpenAI, have agreed to put more guardrails around AI, with leaders from the companies set to meet with President Biden in Washington today. Journal AI reporter Deepa Sitharaman told me that the companies have committed to testing the security and capabilities of AI systems before they're released to the public.
Another thing that they're asking the companies to start working on is watermarking, to put in place some kind of barrier so that fake images don't circulate online and then cause some sort of panic, the way we saw back in May when a viral photo of the Pentagon being attacked started spreading all over social media and the stock market momentarily dipped. And they've gotten these companies to agree to study and consider and put in a watermark. But at the moment, it isn't really clear how technically robust those watermarks can be and how quickly they'll be able to implement them on any kind of scale.
And Deepa, I want to note that most of the companies that we've mentioned here either declined to comment or didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. Given that, do we know how deep their commitment is to these voluntary guardrails?
All the companies are saying that they will continue to work with the White House and that they are also interested in safety testing, but there's no enforcement mechanism. So if they break a rule, this announcement doesn't mean that they will face any kind of punishment. It's primarily a warning shot and a sign that the Biden administration is watching.
That was AI reporter Deepa Sitharaman. In other AI news today, Google co-founder Sergey Brin is back at work after stepping down from an executive role at parent company Alphabet in 2019. We are exclusively reporting that Brin is helping to develop the company's next large AI system and has been involved in hiring sought-after researchers. People familiar with the matter say Brin's return reflects the pivotal moment that Google faces in its development of AI, which it pioneered but was slower than its rivals to turn into new products. The Justice Department is revamping its crypto-related crime investigation team, increasing the number of prosecutors to tackle a surging caseload. A senior DOJ official revealed yesterday that the National Cryptocurrency Enforcement Team, or NCET, would become a permanent part of the criminal division that handles a range of computer-related investigations. NCET was established in 2021 to address concerns about the misuse of cryptocurrencies for illegal activities, and has since played a role in several high-profile cases, including charging FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried with stealing billions of dollars from the exchange's customers. Stocks are entering the final trading day of the week with major U.S. indices at a crossroads. Out on top, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which has posted 9 consecutive days of gains through Thursday, and dragging the NASDAQ and S&P 500. Journal Deputy Finance Editor Quinton Webb explained to me why major U.S. stock markets are diverging.
What we're seeing here, I would frame really as sort of a bit of a catch-up, if you like, from the Dow, which is a more traditional index versus the tech-heavy NASDAQ. If you recall, NASDAQ had a very strong start to the year, and even after this small pullback Thursday, is up something like 34%, where the Dow is up just 6%. And the other important point to make about these indexes is that the Dow is a long-standing index and is price-weighted. So it's the price of the individual stocks that determines their contribution, whereas both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ Composite, like many other indexes globally, are weighted by market capitalizations. And that means when you have these big stocks such as Tesla or Netflix, if they come unstuck, that tends to have a disproportionate effect on the index.
Quinton, what does that mean going into next week when we've got a lot more big tech companies set to report earnings?
That's a very good question, yes. So we have Meta and others reporting next week. So I guess what this means is it's a little bit of a warning shot across the bows. You know, if investors have got a little bit ahead of themselves, they could find themselves disappointed. And if that happens, you could see the NASDAQ in particular come under more pressure.
That was Wall Street Journal Deputy Finance Editor Quinton Webb. Coming up, can China's Xi Jinping propel the country to global superpower status, or will slower growth diminish his dreams? That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
For the next 4 weeks, we'll be taking an in-depth look at China and how Xi Jinping's dream of transforming the country into a global superpower is progressing. This special series will explore how China's economy, Beijing's approach to business, and its regional dominance play into the Chinese leader's plans. And this week, we'll start with the consequences of slowing growth in China, a key challenge for Xi, who needs a strong and dynamic economy to propel China's role in the world. And to do that, I'm joined now by two of my colleagues who have been keeping us up to speed on everything from inflation in China to the country's rising unemployment situation. Jonathan Cheng is our Beijing bureau chief, and in Hong Kong, we've got China economics reporter Stella Yifan Xia with us as well. Jonathan, starting with you, how does economic growth feature in Xi Jinping's long-term dream for China?
Sure. Well, it's no secret that China's economy has been a big engine of its success on the global stage. It has a lot of people. It, for many years, until, in fact, a few weeks ago, had the world's biggest population for a very long time. And of course, that has always been important to China. But really, it's been the economy. What we've seen happen since the late 70s, when China really embarked on this reform path and really just unleashed a lot of its potential. And so there's a parlor game that can be played about whether China will ever surpass the U.S. to become the world's number one economy. But it almost doesn't matter. The distance that it's come has really propelled China to where it is on the global stage. But what that means is that as the economic growth story starts to fade for China, that could also have implications for everything else that China and Xi Jinping has ambitions for.
And we have covered here quite regularly in recent months the economic stresses piling up from continually released data. But if we're now to see that, Jonathan, as part of a larger trend of softening growth, where would that leave China longer term?
Well, you know, I just talked about China being the world's number two economy, but when you divide it by the population, China is not what we would normally consider a wealthy country. When you parcel it out among 1.4 billion people, you get to a per capita GDP that makes China, at this current level, look something like a very large Mexico or a very large Thailand. And those are countries that have come out of poverty. But what it also means is that you do have a lot of people, hundreds of millions of people in China that are living much less well-off lives. And so as we start to see China's growth plateau here, we may start to see the country and its economy plateau at a lower level. And if that's the case, then unlike a Japan, unlike a South Korea, unlike a Singapore or a Taiwan, China may end up getting stuck in what economists call this middle income trap here, where they're never quite able to break through to that next level of per capita GDP growth.
And Stella, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You have reported lately on the Chinese unemployment problem with grads holding out, waiting for jobs that just don't seem to be materializing. There's also a persistent mismatch you've reported on between supply and demand in the housing market, as well as weakening demand globally for the products that China is making. These are obviously relevant developments for gauging the direction of the Chinese economy. But when you back up, do these trends have a larger bearing on this Chinese dream we're talking about here?
Yes, absolutely. It does impact how a lot of Chinese people view the Chinese dream. Rapid economic growth has been the norm for most people in China, especially for the younger generation. Now, as China's economy grew larger, its growth rate naturally was slowed down. But what we've seen this year is even after all COVID restrictions are gone, the country's growth speed has really dropped pretty quickly, unexpectedly. And that certainly has dampened the mood on the ground. From average families to small business owners, a lot of the people that we spoke to seems to be readjusting their expectations about the future. A lot of private business owners hasn't fully recovered after years of harsh crackdown on some of the most vibrant sector in the economy. And on top of that, you know, a lot of the factory owners in southern China we interviewed said they're really struggling to keep overseas orders. So all those factors really leads to a spreading sense of pessimism within China. And more people seem to believe the country's high growth era is over.
From your reporting, Stella, it seems the economic sentiment, the optimism, if you will, among China's younger generation is particularly key now as the country tries to re-energize domestic consumers. Tell us about the concerns that China's young people are contending with now and the potential consequences of that.
This generation of young Chinese, job insecurity appears to be their number one concern. We saw from the latest data that in June, China's youth unemployment reached a record high of over 21%. And some economists say, you know, even that figure underestimate the actual unemployment situation among this younger generation. And that really is one of the top concerns for Chinese leaders, because that can really, you know, be a source of concern for authorities in terms of social stability. And also it's bad for Chinese economy because you have the brightest group of population who are locked outside of the workforce. And that doesn't really help China to improve its overall productivity growth.
Stella just talked about productivity, and that's one of the key things that economists have been talking about for a very long time when it comes to China. The demographic picture for China doesn't look good up ahead. So you're going to get this flipping around of the pyramid where they used to have a lot of young people of working age supporting relatively few elderly people, and now that's going to look the other way around, and a lot more money is going to need to go to taking care of older people, and there are going to be fewer people working to do that. And part of the solution that people are talking about is, in addition to trying to get more babies born, is to try and increase productivity. But China's been pretty resistant to that in the sense that they haven't seen too many gains. And I think demographically, you're going to really start to see that picture get worse and worse for China.
All right, so no easy policy solutions on the demographic front. Stella, is that the case too when it comes to policies to address this slowing growth?
The number we received on Monday really prompted some fear among economists now that China's full year growth target of around 5% may be in jeopardy right now. But so far, the stimulus measures China has used have fallen short of expectations. So right now, all eyes are focusing on the political meeting that will happen later this month. People expect more stimulus measures will be announced. However, the prediction is that still those measures will be relatively incremental in nature.
And Jonathan, some of those measures were announced this week, including further support for consumer spending on big ticket items like cars and electronics. On those measures, the National Development and Reform Commission saying they're part of a multi-pronged package to support the private economy. And yet, investors still want bigger policy stimulus to address what seems like a large economic challenge here. Why aren't they getting that?
Well, one thing that is pretty clear when we look at the 10 years that Xi Jinping has been the leader of China is that while he does recognize the importance of the economy in bringing China to where it is, his view of how the economy fits into the bigger picture is a different one from his predecessors. His predecessors were more focused on building up the economy so that it would provide China with a platform to accomplish some of its other goals down the road. Xi Jinping sees that time as now. In other words, economic growth for the sake of economic growth is no longer what Xi Jinping is after, unlike his predecessors. And there are other priorities that are much more important to him. And among them is national security. This is obviously a time when the U.S. and China have pretty open competition between the two sides. And the U.S. has made quite clear that it is concerned about China and its rise and whether or not it will be a peaceful rise. And so this is a time when Xi Jinping is really saying implicitly with his actions and with his words, he's saying that he's willing to tolerate a lower level of absolute economic growth because national security has become such an important thing.
That was Wall Street Journal Beijing bureau chief Jonathan Cheng, as well as China economics reporter Stella Yifan Xia in Hong Kong. Jonathan, Stella, thank you both so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me too.
And we'll be diving into some of those national security priorities that Jonathan sketched out on next Friday's episode as we look at China's growing military. But for now, that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.